or of 30 diseases, then you can be diagnosed as being an AIDS patient. So this seems to help the confusion, doesn't it, as far as how AIDS is looked at when they just have these large numbers. And since there's supposed to be, I guess, an AIDS strain in Africa that's different than America and in Europe, which is why I guess they're hypothesizing people are coming down with different types of symptoms. Why hasn't that strain in Africa ever hit these shores so that people would come down with that narrow category of a strain? And have they isolated this particular strain that says this is the African strain and this is the symptoms you will come down with, and here's the American and European one, and this is the symptoms you'll come down with?
All efforts that they have made to distinguish, quote, the African strain from the non-African strain have failed to show a difference, a consistent difference. They use the same tests, the same antibody tests, which means we are looking at exactly the same virus in Africa, in Europe, and in America. If they use it, you correctly pointed out, the convention is in Africa, we don't do the test because it's too expensive. A test costs a minimum of $25 to $50, which is 3 times more than the average health spending per person in sub-Saharan Africa. 3 times more per year. They spend about $8 to $10 per year on health, so they cannot afford the AIDS test. So they use a presumptive diagnosis. Now, you're also pointing out a very critical fact here, that AIDS in Africa is not in risk groups, it's in the general population. How can the same virus be random in the population, meaning heterosexual, if you like that word, and practically homosexual in this country, where it's only with boys, male homosexuals, and intravenous drug users, almost exclusively, except a few chunky women? It's the same virus. That can't be true, but we never talk about that either in the AIDS establishment. They say it's a cofactor. Whatever that cofactor is, I've never heard the answer. Well, I think the cofactor is very simply a different chemical cause. A very old one in Africa, namely malnutrition, parasitic infection, lack of drinkable water, and no sanitation or very poor sanitation. The same river is the sewer, the source of water, the dishwasher, and the bathtub.
Right, so what you're basically saying is that the poor economic and health standards that exist in many parts of Africa, which, you know, unsanitary water, so on and so forth, helps bring about these various diseases that are being diagnosed as having, for the people as having AIDS, yet it really has to do with the health standards and conditions that the people are living in.
And look what they are. They have just renamed all diseases. It's weight loss, it's diarrhea, and tuberculosis. That's exactly what you get when you have nothing to eat or not adequate nutrition.
Right.
You don't have any proteins and no vitamins and have no water.
Well, let's hear some of the people who often are within the Orthodox and are paraders of the line of the HIV high.
I bet they are jamming the phone lines. Call it in. Anthony Fauci.
Here,
Paul Wolverding.
Well, first let's start off with Ira Flatow. He's the host of an NPR show called Science Friday.
Is he on the phone right now?
No. He's not that bold. Anyway, he has on some AIDS specialists who talk about the spread and how it may spread and how your genetic makeup may help block the infection of HIV. This is the, you know, the CCR5 receptor and on and on. So let's hear what Flato and company has to say, and then let's check out what you have to say.
Flato and Socrates,
A couple of studies.
I'm Socrates.
Studies that, out this week about how AIDS may spread and how it might
be influenced by your genetic makeup. You know, we hear about the genes being important, all kinds of diseases. We're just finally learning now about how your gene makeup may be important in the spread of HIV and your an infection. Researchers have known since the mid-90s that people with certain genes are far less likely to become infected with HIV if they're exposed to the virus. HIV enters cells through a receptor, a sort of a gateway called CCR5. We each have two copies of the CCR5 gene, one from each of our parents. And people with two mutated or defective copies of the gene have almost complete resistance to HIV. Interesting research point here. Mm-hmm. And last week, researchers reported that having multiple copies of a different gene called CCI3L1 also gives a measure of resistance. So are there other genes that might be at work? How can this information be used to develop better treatments or vaccines? Joining me now to talk about that finding and how it fits in with what we know about CCR5 are the two lead researchers. Dr. Sunil Ahuja is a professor of medicine, microbiology, and immunology at the University of Texas Health Science Center. He is also director of the VA HIV-AIDS Center there. He joins us from the studios of Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thank you for being with us today, Dr. Ahuja.
Good afternoon. Thank you for being here.
Good afternoon to you. Also there with Dr. Ahuja at Texas Public Radio is U.S. Air Force Colonel and Medical Doctor Matthew Dolan. He is the director of the Defense Institute for Medical Operations at the Brooks City Base in San Antonio. Thank you for being with us today.
Glad to be here.
Let me begin with you. Why did you look at the? Tell us about this specific gene, the CCR5, and how it works and why you looked at it.
Well, CCR5, as you indicated, was earlier described as one of the important gateways for the entry of HIV, and that observation really was born to fruit by that observation you said, which is that when individuals have two defective copies of this, they don't express CCR5 on the cell surface, and that affords pretty much very high resistance to it. So that somewhat forms like a lock, if you will, and for the entry of the virus or a gateway. And then these keys, which are like the chemokines, if you will, which interact with this receptor. And some very seminal studies earlier done actually from some investigators back at Iron Diamond, like Dr. Kaup and all, had shown that individuals who are highly exposed to the virus but resist the virus, actually their cells make a large amount of these chemokines. Mm-hmm. And another seminal study by Dr. Gallo and his colleagues in Italy and Zaguri had shown that actually hemophiliacs who had received tainted blood, and some of these individuals, hemophiliacs, had resisted the virus, and their blood cells again produced large amounts of chemokines that interacted with CCR5. So CCR5 are these soluble immune molecules that interact with CCR5, and then the hypothesis would be that individuals who had low amounts or who innately produced low amounts of these chemokines would be more susceptible to virus. And then some other investigators, including Dr. Gallo and others, had shown that individuals who produced low amounts of or higher amounts of chemokines had a good clinical outcome. So it was a logical extension of this mm-hmm. work to ask whether certain chemokines could influence the susceptibility to HIV and AIDS. And we took a genetic approach to examine this problem. And the chemokine that we focused on is actually IRS called CCL3L1. And it's a very potent ligand for CCR5, or an immune molecule that interacts. It's one of the most potent ones of them. And by virtue of that, it actually has fairly significant anti-HIV properties in vivo, so like natural anti-HIV substance in the body.
All right, Professor, that was Suna Hugo's take on it. What's your response?
Well, this is a classical example of junk science. If you pour in a lot of money in a project, you find takers who come up with sophisticated explanation like this that sound extremely scientific and are complete garbage, in my opinion. And I tell you why. We all have the same genes here on this planet. I mean, we humans, as a race.
Right.
We have yet to find a gene that you have and I don't, and the other way around. But some of those genes are mutated, and that again is random. There's a certain percentage of hemophiliacs or sickle cell anemia or something in the population.
Right.
And this is quite random. I mean, no, there's a little bit racial biases in one way or another, but within a race at least it's totally random. So What are we saying, or what these smart doctors are saying here, is there are mutations that make you susceptible to AIDS, and in others that are resistant, there's no such mutations and therefore they are resistant. Now look at the result in America. Guess where these mutations must be? 70% of them in male homosexuals and 30% of them in intravenous drug users. And the male or female mainstream American Republican, I assume, and Democratic even, heterosexual population doesn't have these genes. Hasn't God made a great decision to get... Let these genes be with those chunkies and homos, and we get rid of them slowly, and maybe a little bit more in Africa than I wish. Isn't that great? God, in His wisdom, has distributed these genes exactly as the majority would like to see it, isn't it?
It shouldn't be too shocking, huh? Now, next, Hugo goes into the variation in the doses of the genes and the low copy of this in your genes. So let's see what Hugo has to say and move on from there. Check it.
Maybe he's on the phone. Let's have a look. Huh?
The way we examined this then was to basically ask if individuals who had variations in the gene that produces this chemokine called CCL3L1, whether that influenced their risk for HIV-AIDS susceptibility. And as you pointed out, most of us have two copies for most genes, or two alleles. In this case, this gene is actually a different kind of variation. And most investigators look at changes in what we call the DNA alphabet soup of the A, C, T, or G, the nucleotides that we call them. In this case, this is a different kind of variation where we're talking about difference in the dosage of a gene. And so CCL3L1 gene copy numbers vary among individuals. And we screened large populations of individuals and found that individuals who possess low copy numbers of this gene have a higher predisposition to acquiring infection. And once infected, their rates of progression...
Let me see if I can translate for the lay people. This is a large mouthful of stuff that very few of us understood, but I'll see if I can translate it for you. In other words, if you have a large amount of CC3L1, it floods the receptors and blocks HIV from getting in. Would that, in a few words, sum up what you've said? If you have the genes, you have a lot of copies of this gene, you make a lot of this chemokine, as you called it. It goes into the lock. It keeps that lock shut and prevents the AIDS virus from entering the cell. So what you want to do is maybe make something that can help flood the gene, the receptors for HIV?
That would be a simple way of putting it. That would be correct. I mean, it would be like trying to find an analogous version that could do the same thing that the natural version does.
I want to bring on now someone who's studying the genetic differences, not in humans, but our closest relatives, some of our closest.
All right. Well, it's in essence more of the same. He says himself, they use a mouthful of stuff that needs to be translated into the same idea that people who get AIDS are mutants compared to others. But mutants are randomly distributed, not just homosexuals and junkies. They would be everywhere. They would be in Walnut Creek and in the Castro, and they would be in Lafayette or in San Ramon, not only in the Castro or in the hemophilia wards or in the junkie courts.
Right.
That's just absurd. There's no precedent for this, and what they're saying is just... That's what I call junk science. You give enough money, you look for a gene and publish that, and nobody asks even this the most fundamental question that we just posed. If that were controlling susceptibility to AIDS via the virus, we should have AIDS in all groups of the population, and we definitely don't in America and in Europe. And this is a huge sample. We have 280 or 300 million Americans and 400 or 500 million Europeans, where AIDS is exclusively restricted to these risk groups, male homosexuals and junkies. It's different in Africa, but there we have no risk group at all. There the correlation is very good with malnutrition. The doctors don't get AIDS either in Africa. Isn't that interesting? And the scientists visiting there from the CDC and the NIH regularly to catch new strains of viruses never come home with AIDS. With lots of viruses, they come home, but never with AIDS.
Aren't they
lucky, huh?
Now, this wouldn't be the first time that an infectious disease, quote-unquote, was misdiagnosed, or something supposedly. Like, wasn't there what was called the Smone disease that was considered to be an infectious agent in Japan, but it turned out not to be infectious? Could you explain that?
It was a diarrhea, and in fact it led to blindness in the end. The first symptoms are diarrhea. It's a drug that is used against infections, enteric infections. Enterovioform was the trade name. It's a Swiss company, Ciba, made it. You could buy it in Mexico. You could even buy it here for prescriptions. And if you use it for a short time, it's okay. But if you use it long term, then it causes blindness and eye diseases. And so they thought that was, and of course, it was again said to be a virus related to polio. And for years, it was treated this way. Until finally somebody, a review was made that this is in fact a drug, an iatrogenic disease, which is a fancy word for me.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathrop's Piers Broadsides, a little bit late as usual, but hey, worth the waiting for. Stay with me.
All right, we got the tenor sax, vocal group, piano, drums, and guitar. We're all set to make a hit rock and roll record. Now let's hear it. Hold it, hold it. Something's missing.
A teenage idol, man. You have a teenage idol.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, wait here. I'll get one. Hey, kid.
Who, me?
Yeah, can you sing?
No.
Good, come with me. Hey, where were you going just now?
I was on my way to high school.
Perfect. Now, you stand up there in front of that microphone and say high school when I point at you. Kid, you're going to be a big record star.
Ooh.
Hey, that's good, too. Throw that in. Now, here we go.
High school. Ooh, ooh, ooh. High school. Ooh, ooh, ooh. High school.
Hey, wait a minute. What did you put that on the end for?
Well, it was just a little, you know, embellishment.
Oh, yeah? Well, you keep that up, and the first thing you know, this record will swing. And then where will we be?
Yeah.
Okay, you guys, that's the first side.
Isn't that a kind of a short song?
Yeah, it gets more plays that way.
Oh,
Hey, by the way, what's your name?
Clyde Ankle.
Perfect.
But I can't sing.
Well, what's that got to do with anything? You got all the requirements. A pretty face and a pompadour.
Well, do I get to pose beside a tiger?
Nah, that's been done. Maybe we'll get you a moose.
Well, maybe now I can have my adenoids taken out.
What, and ruin your amateur standing?
Well, could you at least get me a date with that mouseketeer that grew up?
All right, we'll see.
Oh, boy.
Now, you're going to go 3 nights a week for finger-snapping lessons.
Ooh, I've wanted to do that as long as I've been in showbiz.
Hey, wait a second. How long you been in showbiz?
About a minute and a half.
Oh. Now, let's see if you can act humble in front of the press.
Okay. Oh, I'll never replace Elvis.
Yeah, all right.
He's the king. Yeah,
all right,
boy.
All right. Don't overdo it.
Hey, how can we be sure the girls are going to scream at me?
Ah, don't worry. Will you, kid? I got a screaming machine right here.
Yeah?
It replaces a teenage audience. We put it in the back of the auditorium, push the button, Panicsville. Here, listen. Will you get out of that drummer's lap?
Bent my cymbal, man.
Now, here's some variations.
Emmanuel! Emmanuel! Emmanuel!
Wrong crowd. Well, let's do the other side of the record. I'll turn on the machine here and there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so you can get, you know, conditioned to it.
Yeah, okay. What am I going to use for words on this side?
Who cares? Say the first thing that comes into your head.
Okay. What are you going to do with that sharp stick?
Well, never mind what I'm going to do with it. Just sing, will you? Here we go.
When I was on my way to high school,
when a guy came through the door, and he said he's going to make me a big record star. But as I can't sing, he says it doesn't matter. He says you've got a pretty face and a pompadour. What you doing with that stick, man?
Stick with me, kid. Clyde Ankle is going to jump up the charts.
Here's if you keep on with that stick, man.
All right.
Well, you really think you can get any disc jockeys to play my songs?
It's getting tougher, but I'm on my way to see one right now.
Oh, boy.
Right after I stop off at the bank.
The old paler old blues, huh?
What kind of crack is that? That's an insult to my integrity.
And that was Stan Freberg, The Old Paola Blues, Part 1, Part 2 later, from a four-part CD, which is actually combined with a video and a very interesting booklet you can pick up at the Santa Cruz Library. I've decided to do a little library outreach here so you can know what's in your own public library, as well as play some of, well, I would say my favorite stuff. A lot of this Freberg stuff is my favorite stuff, but it's also stuff I haven't heard before. Some of the stuff has never been really released except on this disc, or actually a set of discs called The Edge of Stan Freberg, who is a political satirist as well as a brilliant advertising guy who he actually kind of insisted on his own ads. But more about him perhaps another time. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, and this show is Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides. We go on for about 3 hours and 15 minutes. It's a long one. Do a lot of talking about local issues, civil rights stuff, long-standing abuses like the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, and we cover the streets a lot as much as we can. And hopefully you'll help us out there, because it is your participation that really gives the real dialogue to the show. And you can call in. 831-427-3772, 831-427-FRSC. That's us, Free Radio Santa Cruz. So there's also a chat room you can jump on in case you can't get in on the phone line or you prefer to do it this way. The chat room is www.pagesincolor, and you just go there and you can make comments, rude or otherwise. That's what I'm doing right now. Actually just going there, not making a rude comment. And we actually have a working internet here, unlike last show, which is always reassuring when that happens, because it means I have access to other stuff as well as access to you. So, again, call in, come in through Pages in Color, or you can leave a message on the Huff line. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the civil rights group I work with. We meet every Wednesday about 8:30, sometimes a little earlier, at the basement of the county building at 701 Ocean Street in the so-called American Cafe. And you can check that out if you'd like. That goes on until about 10:30. In fact, today I'm going to be playing some cuts from the Planning Commission hearing that happened above us, six floors above us on the fifth floor of the county building. We were in the basement. The housing element of the county was up for discussion. Not because the Planning Commission actually intended to hear from the public in any meaningful way. They actually were just doing what they had to do under court order, because the wham-bam, thank you approach of the Board of Supervisors, which is essentially to ignore low-income housing needs as much as possible, and even moderate-income housing needs as much as possible. It was sent back to them. Their planning element has been found non-compliant with state requirements. As a consequence, the county is losing a lot of money, but that apparently doesn't bother the Board of Supervisors. However, it does bother some folks who note that there's just completely inadequate housing for people in the county, not to mention the city, and they talked about it. And HUF members, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom folks, were encouraged to come and talk about it too, and some of us did. That was at the urging of Housing Now! In Santa Cruz activist Linda LeMaster, who may be calling in, and who knows, maybe talking with us, possibly. I said she may be listening in, and then she may be calling in as well. So let's begin with a little street discussion. Yesterday there was a street fair. It's called the Saturday Fair. There are actually two fairs. One was a kids' fair downtown, rather well-attended and, I don't want to say crowded affair, but there was a lot, kind of a busy affair. There was a lot going on. The street in front of the Cinema 9, in front of O'Neill's, that whole T-shaped area downtown on Pacific Avenue and Cooper Streets was blocked off. There was a skateboarding arena where people could skateboard back and forth, up and down. And there were numerous other activities for kids, which looked like fun. There was even a former Pizza My Heart owner and Downtown Association director. I'm not sure if he's still the executive director. He was running around kind of saying hello to everybody. But about two blocks over in front of the Civic Auditorium, there was another event, which has actually been announced on Free Radio. It was an event called the Saturday Fair, which apparently is going to be held every 2 weeks. Let's tune in on your intrepid narrator checking out that event and possibly checking out the other event as well.
Apparently, the author of this questionable event, your name, sir?
Arindam Krishnadas.
I hear the walrus playing in the background, but what is this event?
This is called the Santa Cruz Saturday Market.
You blocked off the street here in front of the Civic and the side of City Hall, and of course you're kitty corner from the library, and right up the street, two blocks away, there's a somewhat larger event, which has obviously been designed to sabotage attendance at your event. heartily laughed, yes. And here we have musician Meriwether Mike, who's doing some origami on the grass. How's the origami going there, Mike?
It's happening. We're just sharing the love here at the first, Saturday Market. And Joe Breakfast is here figuring out where to put his origami frog. So we got just lots of love in Santa Cruz. So just come on out. Be a part of it, right?
This is going to be happening every Saturday, every other Saturday? Well put. But can you give us more detailed information? Well, there you have it. It's a fun event or something along those lines. We're here at the Empire Academy Summer Program booth at the downtown... What the hell is the name of this event?
The kids' event. I think it's the kids' fair.
And we're kind of in front of O'Neill Sports. So we're talking with...
Mr. Kurt Nickerson, co-director of Empire Academy.
And is this merely a... What is this Empire Academy? And who should be interested in it?
Empire Academy is a private school here in downtown Santa Cruz to give a little competition to the dilapidated public system. And who should be interested in any parent who has children that are in the 6th to 12th grades?
With how much money in their pockets?
Well, a decent amount. We are tuition-driven, I will readily admit that. But then again, this is a wonderful capitalist country.
You wish to advertise how much it costs?
It's $12,000 a year, so a highly competitive price compared to some of the other private schools in the county.
All right, so all you Free Radio listeners with 12 G's and some kids aren't going to proper educational institutions, step right up to the Empire Academy at
1025 Center Street.
What's the matter with the educational system, the public school system? Why are you gutting our public school systems and encouraging rich kids to wander into your place?
Well, the public system has is just riddled with problems, such as like 35 to 40 kids in a classroom. Half of the kids are falling through the cracks, not getting any proper attention. At our school, you get about 9 to 12 kids in a classroom. The teacher-to-student ratio is like 1 to 3. I mean, they get nothing but attention and community and family-orientated education.
And how many kids are in your school?
At present, only 35, and we've purposely capped ourselves off at 50, so it'll always have a community orientation to it. We're all one giant family there.
How long have you been going for?
We're finishing up our second year right now. We just started 2 years ago. I'm looking forward to number three next year, and we think we're going to have a waiting list of 50 kids. So we're pretty excited about it.
Wow. Any government grants? Have you been funded by the Billy Graham Crusade?
No, not in the least. In fact, we have received absolutely zero public dollars in any form whatsoever. We're purely tuition-driven, a private entity.
What about some fundamentalist funding from those who understand the nature of the terrorist menace?
None whatsoever. none at all.
I see. Well, what's happening down here today? Have you seen any... I don't see too many police officers wandering around.
No, there hasn't been a whole lot of civic blue suits walking this way or that. They've been pretty much out of the scene, as it were. It's mainly for kids today, and so it's been a pretty quiet and family-orientated celebration down here.
Thank you, Kurt M.
Well, thank you, Mr. Robert Norris. It's been a pleasure.
Indeed. Listening to the music of the Equal Time Sax Quartet, selling their own CDs on the corner, featuring ragtime jazz and Latin music. And here they are displayed on a table without harassment at the corner of Pacific and Soquel. Apparently, according to informed sources, these folks actually purchased a permit for about $30 a year, which may not be such a bad deal. There you have it. It's around 2:30 on Saturday, May 28th. Broken, hungry, anything helps. How's it going?
It's doing all right, man. I'm still smiling, so there's
some. You are. I'm impressed. You're here in front of Dale Williams. No hassles from police, hosts, merchants.
Not today.
And what that indicates on another day, you did get a...
Yeah, exactly. There's this one cop that just walks up and down and harasses everybody.
Ann Bechtel.
What?
Some chunky woman in light blue.
Yeah, that's her.
And what is Pam, that's her name, Pam, said to you in the last few weeks?
Oh, it's just whatever I'm doing, she looks, she nitpicks at everything. So now I just carry around the book so I can show her that I'm doing right.
the ordinance.
Yes, the ordinance.
So how long have you been out here today?
About 3-4 hours.
So you have a little pinwheel that's kind of a star made of straws. You have a heart-shaped...
A friend of mine gave that to me.
Poked in the sidewalk. And you also have a nice little Valentine's Day heart full of your life savings.
Exactly.
And how many hours a day are you usually out here doing this?
4 or 5.
And what's your name?
My name is Stephanie.
And are you a local or out of town?
I've been here for about a week.
And are you intending to put down roots? Are you out of here?
I'm not sure yet. I mean, it's kind of cool. I think I might stay for a few months, maybe the summer.
When you sleep at night, are you sleeping outside?
Yeah, I have been.
Any hassles for camping?
No, actually. No rangers, no nothing.
Now, you're a single, attractive woman, or perhaps not single, but you're an attractive woman. Any problems with that in this neck of the patriarchy?
Every once in a while, but it's not too bad. They're polite, you know, about
it. No assaults?
No.
How long have you been on the road?
For a little under a year now.
Yeah, where are you from?
I've been up north in Fort Bragg, Mendocino.
Why aren't you in the Marines?
Because I don't want to be.
There you go. We've been talking with... What's your name again?
Stephanie.
Stephanie, anything you want to say to the free radio folks?
Hang in there, you guys.
Thanks, Stephanie.
Yeah, you have a good day.
And here's a... Is this hemp jewelry you're making here?
Yes, it is.
I see you have a sign here in front of you, anything green. You're seated near a recycling bin. And you're observing, of course, a man walking a criminal dog on the mall coming up here. How does it feel being at the crime center of Santa Cruz?
I like being here. I think it's beautiful. I love the redwoods.
Dig it. Now, are you in fact getting some green things here, donations from passersby?
Well, a couple children asked me what I was doing, and I showed them how to make it and gave them some beads, and their father helped me out with some money, but that's it.
And how long have you been stringing us along?
I've been stringing five bracelets I've made today and yesterday, but I've been stringing for probably 3 months.
Here at this spot, or?
First time at this spot. Normally it's Ocean Beach, San Diego at the farmer's market there Wednesdays.
Wow. So no hassles from people with big guns and hefty rule books?
Not yet. Yesterday I got kicked out for being too close to a business, but...
What's your name?
My name's Brecken.
Hey, Brecken, anything you want to say to the many, many fans of yours out there in free radio?
No.
Well, there you are, strong but silent. Thank you, Brecken.
No problem.
And it's free radio, Chris. You're listening to, pausing briefly here to pass on a flyer I just received from environmental advocate Ron Lau, who I've been chatting with occasionally on the air, occasionally off the air. He's actually lurking in the studio right now, even as we speak. And he's passed me a flyer which talks about United Nations World Environment Day event, Green City Visions, Rebuilding the City to Save the Environment. It's a one-day conference, according to this flyer, Tuesday, May 31st, so that's in 2 days, 9:30 a.m. to 6 p.m., way up in Oakland at the Scottish Rite Center at 1547 Lakeside Drive for all of you folks. I guess take the bus, don't drive a car or bike up there, or I'm not sure. Watch it on television. I'm not sure how we're going to deal with this. I'm trying to coax Ron into talking about this, but he's a shy guy. He's hiding in the corner over there. He won't come over. He's a... Ron, as you know, is the owner, or maybe you don't know, he's the owner of property downtown, one of the few pieces of undeveloped property. It's the one next to Lulu Carpenter's across from the Veterans Building and the post office. Sort of, I think Jamba Juice is also across the street on Pacific Avenue. It used to be the old coffee roasting company and part of the old bookshop Santa Cruz. And it's sort of, you know, it's now leads into the some restaurants and shops that are open, but the property itself has been undeveloped and a target recently for the redevelopment agency, Seal Cirillo, and the rest of the gang downtown and City Hall, who want to see things going up there. Now, some of us were looking years ago for a plaza. We were looking for kind of green developments downtown. Ron has talked on the air recently about how he wants to see green development, too, although I guess his notion of green development has to do with, you know, ordinary building development, though done with green materials and done with in an environmentally conscious way. And he's my concern about this has not so much been the specifics and particulars about how these what goes into the buildings and so forth, but, of course, how the buildings are treating the people and how this actually impacts low-income people and so forth. And it's a little obscure on that point. But what isn't obscure is that the city council, with its own plans, usually wants to press forward, circumvent the public process, and proceed with its own process, its own agenda, as apparently it's trying to do with the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel or the Coast Santa Cruz Hotel expansion. It tried to do with the Beach South of Laurel plan. It's done numerous times. And has been held occasionally in check by the community. And the latest deal is that Ron's property is under threat of eminent domain, which means, of course, the city seizes it, claiming that it's a blighted area and therefore it needs to do something with it. Ron, however, has been getting together developers, at least that's what he claims, and I believe him. Had dinner with him last night, and we talked about the issue. I had with me the razor sharp Scott Graham. Well, it's perhaps a little too much praise, but Scott is a very savvy guy, at least that's been my impression, about doings at City Hall. So a very opinionated man. But nonetheless, his opinions are worth considering and weighing. And he's also had, as I have, a very skeptical view of the Santa Cruz City Council and its lack of real democratic process and its tendency to be beholden to and in the hands of special interest groups like the city manager's clique and various other, the police department, if you will. The conservative staff seem to control what goes on at City Hall, regardless of who gets into power election-wise. You know, you vote in Ed Porter and, you know, he comes back at you with regulations that cut back public comment. That's the great Democrat Ed Porter, which happened a couple months ago. I mean, it's just it's a depressing situation. But anyway, in Ron Lau's case, and I'm doing all the talking because Ron is insisting on remaining silent here, but he won't be silent on June 7th, which is the next city council meeting. There may be a special council meeting this Tuesday, the 31st. The next scheduled special city council meeting that I am particularly aware of is a meeting that will be discussing. It's a special meeting because they're not, the first regular meeting of city council doesn't happen until the second Tuesday, second and fourth Tuesdays, when the regular council meetings happen every month. This will be happening the first Tuesday. The 7th is the first Tuesday. So it's a special meeting, which means it'll probably be held in the afternoon, which means it probably won't be televised. It might be, I don't know. Which means that it's one of these things that they try to do quietly so that if there's any kind of... I'm catching some signals here from from Ron here. 7 o'clock in the evening, I'm told, is the time for the June 7th meeting. So there will be an evening session, interestingly enough, even though this is a special meeting. And so that means actually the public will be more accessible. So I've got to say, okay, you know, maybe all our ranting and raving here has had some consequence, and the city's going to pay some attention to that. Maybe not. Maybe they're just busy doing something else in the afternoon. It's kind of hard to tell. I'm not sure. Maybe, you know, Mike Rotkin is too busy making up laws to tear down political flyers all around town. You may have noticed that in the Sentinel yesterday. There's a bill that's already passed the first reading. Ordinances in Santa Cruz require usually two readings, unless they slip it by with an urgency ordinance. And this is one that essentially supports vigilantes who are running around tearing down flyers all over town. And, you know, some of it obviously has to do with, I guess these are Rotarians, they're described as. Well, I'm going to go into them in a minute. But let's finish up with what's happening with Ron here. Ron is under threat of eminent domain. They're threatening to force him to sell his property so that Cecile Cirillo can pick out her favorite developer and pass it on to her or him to develop. And not necessarily saying there's corruption there, though there have been some intimations from some parties that that's the case. I have no evidence of it. But I don't like the idea of the public being bypassed. And I wouldn't say Ron Lau and I have been big buddies for years. We've known each other somewhat. I've had him on the show. You know, his interest has to do with green building and environmental activities. It's not really my central interest, but I think that he's a local person. He's a person who's been around for many years here. He's willing to talk to the community. He's willing to talk to people. He seems more accessible to me, ironically, than the redevelopment agency and the city council. And I guess you might say, well, do I love Louis Rittenhouse, too? And am I in love with Randall Kane? Those are two other individuals who have a property downtown that's undeveloped. You know, am I going to start championing every holdout property owner in town? I mean, you know, good question. I'm just concerned. I would like to see, obviously, the face of the downtown represent some, well, pass through some real public process, not some hokey, fluffy, feel-good public process like happened with Saul's Tannery on Tuesday, when everybody sits around and kind of chatters with each other about what they'd like to see downtown, but you don't get to grill the staff on what they're really proposing and going to be ramming through around the downtown area until, of course, you see the city council voted up or down in one of these fast but all-night sessions. I mean, it's fast in the sense that you know, you didn't get any preparation for it, but it's all night in the sense that the community finally starts saying, what the hell is going on, fills the chambers, and they have to give people time to talk before they pass their prefabricated stuff. So I was pleased to hear that Ron has plans that are going to go to the Planning Commission before the City Council meets, and then there will be a situation where the City Council can't simply seize this property out of hand, or if they do, they're going to face a court fight, and that will be, I guess it's holding City Council power in check, and that's why I talk about it. I mean, you might be wondering, what does this have to do with homeless people? And the answer is, I'm not aware that Ron is doing anything for homeless people around this issue, but, you know. The issue has to do with the power of City Council, I guess. And the power of City Council, we've seen it in how they treat homeless people. We've seen it in how they coddle the police force, you know, and how they destroy oversight operations like the Citizens Police Review Board. And we've seen it in how they set up low-income housing projects that actually destroy more low-income housing they create, like the Nueva Vista or Dolphin Lee project, which the city dumped, how was it, 17 years of low-income housing funding into? I'm not sure. Well, if you have